I'm going to go ahead and call the Civil Law and Data Practices Committee to order. We will wait till one more person arrives to have a quorum and approve the minutes. And with that, I'm going to ask Representative Kreisha to come forward with his bill. He was just here. Where did he go? There he is. Welcome to the committee, Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
This morning we are going to be hearing just the part of your bill that applies to our committee, which is on page 8 regarding the Court of Appeals. And so, Representative Kreisha, I will move House File 1261. And I believe that you have an author's amendment.
I do.
That's the A4, and I'll go ahead and move that for you. You want to tell us a little bit about what the A4 does?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so all we're doing with the A4 amendment is, as we're looking through this and trying to get language that everyone can agree to, is we are simply going to reform the existing statute instead of trying to put our own language in regarding this part of the bill. And when we go out and we grab the existing statute that's out there, we're referring to that. So we just want to make it very simple and try to make this bill a little bit more palatable for everyone that has heartburn.
Okay, very good. Any discussion on the A1 amendment, or A4 amendment? Sorry. Oh, I can't move it. We'll take a question. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just give a little bit more of a background about really what this bill does and what you're attempting to do or not to do to the Court of Appeals, if that's the section that's here?
Representative Kreisha.
And Madam Chair, if I could call up, I'd like to bring up one of my testifiers who can help me out quite a bit on this.
Sure. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lloyd Grooms. And the answer to your question, Representative Hillstrom, what we're doing here is under the section that you've identified is currently there are circumstances where an agency has not gone through rulemaking, has actually is engaging using guidance, proclamations, otherwise, in terms of trying to enforce particular provisions. What this does is currently, if you challenge a rule, you go directly to the Court of Appeals. This is simply saying if you want to challenge the agency's use of guidance, you're going to go through the same process immediately to the Court of Appeals.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And is this going to public safety next because they have the budget of the Court of Appeals? And I would assume that there's a few of these, and I would assume it'll have a budget impact.
It is going to state gov finance from here.
And then will it eventually end up in?
I could not tell you for sure. Most likely, if okay. It has a judicial cost to it.
Thank you.
Okay. We're waiting for one more person to show up. Any other member questions about this, the A1 amendment?
Before.
Representative
A4 amendment, Madam Chair.
The A4, I'm sorry, I keep calling it the A1. Well, we'll just kind of wait till we get a quorum here.
Would you like to hear stories about my childhood while we're waiting, Madam Chair?
I would.
Oh, if you can choose one that the committee could hear, that it's okay to be on public record, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I no longer have stories that I can share.
So we're hiding under the stairs.
Oh, boy.
How was your night?
How was my night? Very short. Yours?
Slept like a baby.
Oh, I did sleep like a baby. It takes me 3 hours to get to sleep. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe we could just temporarily lay this over, see if there's any public testimony on the bill in general, have them step off and start the next one.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. We do have one testifier, I believe, that wants to speak. To some concerns that you may have with the bill. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Kirk Kadelka, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I'm here on behalf of the agencies to discuss our concerns of the bill. In previous hearings, we've outlined our overall concerns with the bill, economic impact trumping all other concerns such as consumer protection, human health and privacy issues, and the creation of duplicative and redundant processes that result in costs, but no little added value. So today I'm just going to focus on the last two sections of the bill that pertain to the committee's jurisdiction. The first is the law the current state law already prevents an agency from enforcing guidance, policy, bulletins, or other as an adopted rule, and provides a remedy to those who believe that's happening through the Office of Administrative Hearings in 14.381. The question we have as agencies is, what is not working with that system that we're creating another system that mirrors, in some places, that issue? And there are some differences, and those are some important differences. One, we believe the way the language is worked, it encourages actions to be brought before the court just to the law, just to cause a delay. Right now, the changes in the bill grant an automatic stay without having to show the argument that has merit and that there's potential harm or hardship to the litigant. Comparing that to the Office of Administrative Hearings process, which has an order to stop a rule, only once the Office of Administrative Hearings has decided that the bulletin or guide is actually unpromulgated rulemaking. In addition, expenses are borne with no mechanism for recovery by the agencies, even if the court confirms the agency did no wrong. That's a different standard than under 14.381. While it's used as a model, there's a distinct difference there. The language previously was written, so bad faith and frivolous was a standard where the agency could seek reimbursement. The language only changes that, and it has the same meaning, but states now the agencies can only do it in good faith efforts. And there's a difference there. The agency could still prevail and the person have a good faith effort. However, that's different than what's done over in the Office of Administrative Hearings. So at that point, the agency would not be able to recoup the cost when they did prevail. This creates an incentive to delay with the automatic stay and also the chance of not having to pay to make that challenge. That's different than other standards in the courts. We understand the authors and the supporters of the bill want a second opinion outside the Office of Administrative Hearings to challenge the agency's guidance or fact sheet that may be an unpromulgated rule. However, we also have questions on how well this is going to work. Normally, the Court of Appeals has cases brought to it with an established record, fact-finding already done by the District Court, the Office of Administrative Hearings, or a final agency decision that has a record. An example with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is a permit. We have a large record that goes by. It helps speed up the process so that the appeals court focuses on the very succinct question that's being asked and doesn't spend more time fact-finding. It's also why the current law with the Court of Appeals allows challenges of rules only on constitutionality of a rule, exceedance of a statutory authority to create a rule, or the agency didn't follow the Administrative Procedure Act. All three items are fairly simple things to look for in the material. It doesn't require a large amount of findings for it to be done. With that, Madam Chair and committee members, I conclude my testimony. If there's any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have any idea how many currently go to the administrative rulemaking process so that we have a general idea of how many will go straight to the Court of Appeals?
Mr. Kudelka.
Madam Chair and committee members, I don't have a number. It does happen. I know the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency had a case last year that did that, but we can work on those numbers for the committee.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Representative Kreisha, any other testimony that you would like to give or speak to the issues that Mr. Kudelka spoke to, or maybe your testifier would like to respond? I don't know. If not, we can move ahead. And
sure. And the only thing that I would say, and Mr. Kudelka has been absolutely wonderful. In fact, I think if we were both born into different lives, we would have been childhood friends. but no, he's been to the office many times, and we've been trying to work through this. The one thing I would point out, and it keeps being referred to as what status quo is, and we're changing that. There's no question about that. We are trying to solve some of the problems that we've heard, and we are trying to change this process to make it a little bit more palatable. In the statute that he refers to, what we are doing is that a petition could be brought forth in good faith and that the assessment would constitute an undue hardship. All we're changing there is an or. We're saying that either one of those conditions is enough to bring this forward, and it doesn't necessarily have to be both. So, yes, I'll acknowledge the changes that he's bringing forward, and I would bring it to the committee. We are trying to change these because of the hardships and the difficulties that we've had in some cases. Sometimes it's working great, and sometimes we need to review these, and I'm asking for a balance there.
Fantastic. Okay. Thank you. We do have a quorum now, so the first order of business is to approve the minutes of March 11th. Do I have a motion to move? Representative Johnson moves the minutes of March 11th. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Next order of business is the A4 amendment. Any discussion on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. I will renew my motion to move House File 1261 to have it be referred to the Committee on Government Operations as amended. All those in favor, please signify.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to make a statement before the vote. Representative Carisha, I'm not going to vote for your bill today. I think that it's got some issues that are troubling. I'm hoping that it's going to go to public safety and we can deal with the Court of Appeals issues as I see them. But I just wanted you to know that, you know, I'm not going to support your bill today.
And Madam Chair and Representative.
Representative Carisha.
I appreciate that. And if I could, I'll more than happily circle back with you on the House floor, and I'd love to hear your concerns. As you know, the feedback's always helpful to me. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Again, I'll renew my motion to re-refer House File 1261 as amended to the Committee on Government Operations and Elections. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. 1261 is on its way to GovOps.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Carisha. I believe we're waiting on Representative Anderson for his bill. Folks, I'm going to have to reconsider the motion on House File 1261. It is supposed to be re-referred to State Government Finance. So all those in favor of, let's see, do I have to pull it out of one committee?
Just about to reconsider and just re-refer.
So, okay, so we are going to reconsider House File 1261, that it should be going to, that should be re-referred to State Government Finance Committee. And all those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The 1261 is on its way to State Government Finance as amended.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you just did a reconsideration, so I think you actually have to do two separate motions. So then now the bill's before us, and I think you need
to
make the motion to refer it to the other committee.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. So now I'd like to move that House File 1261 go to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
The 1261 is on its way to State Gov Finance, as amended. Okay, and Representative Anderson should be here momentarily.
Madam Chair, is anyone opposed to his bill?
I don't know. 216.
Yes. Okay. I was going to offer to help, but if it's got opposition, I don't want that.
You can present it.
Well, if he, I'm assuming he has testifiers that are, I don't know if anybody's here.
Should
yeah.
Mr.
Yeah.
Peterson, do you want to, Madam Chair, in the interest of time, do we want to
sure.
let the testifiers go? And I will be happy to move House File 216 so we can start hearing from Mr. Peterson and others.
All right. Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee. If you just want to, I don't know if he was planning on having you explain the bill or not, but since you're here, would you be prepared to do that?
I could give you a general gist of the bill.
Okay.
Yep.
That'd be great. Go ahead.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, my name's Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and this is a bill that we've worked on for probably 4 or 5 years. Representative Ron Szymanski was the original author. And some of the members know he was an apple grower and an apple farmer, was interested in this bill and carried it. And then last session we had Representative Clark Johnson carry the bill. And this year Representative Anderson is carrying the bill. And the bill also supported not just by Farmers Union, but Farm Bureau and other groups such as the Fruit and Vegetable Growers, Second Harvest, Heartland, the grape growers, other groups like that. And basically what it does is it provides a civil lawsuit immunity for agritourism professionals due to the inherent risks of agritourism activities. So what we see on farms is a lot of people are wanting to get closer to how their food is produced, and that's a good thing. You know, we've had that for years. We've had events at the farm or things, you know, happening on the farm, but now we see more of what we call CSAs, if you're familiar with that, or community supported agriculture. We see breakfasts on the farm, we see crop plot days, a lot of different activities on the farm. And so this bill, we feel, provides farmers some basic protection in those events. We also feel that it's a good piece for a notice by placing a sign at the outset of when people come onto a farm. They see the sign and it reminds them they are looking at this as a, you know, that you're entering a farm, and kind of reminds them. So it also provides that help. We've had this for livestock events or horses. I show horses, have horses. We've had these signs and for many years on those events. Also, we've had quite a few other states have been passing this bill, Wisconsin was the latest, and so a lot of our apple farms on the southeast side of the state have been looking at this in Wisconsin and seeing if we couldn't do something like this. So that's kind of where our support comes from. And I would say, without getting into the bill quite a bit, we've been working with Mr. Carlson, the other interested parties in us, for quite a while, and have been working on it. And I think we've come to some agreement that in amendments that he can talk about better than I can. So we've also been working with the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Health. We still have maybe a couple issues work on, but I think we're getting to where we can move this bill forward. Appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. And Representative Anderson, welcome. What we did is Representative Hoppe moved your bill, and then we just had Mr. Peterson give a brief explanation of the bill. So certainly we'd like to hear your comments before we move on to the next testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had a failure of communication, so I apologize for that.
No worries at all. We're moving faster than we anticipated this morning. So.
Yeah, Mr. Peterson explained it well, and something a lot of farm groups would like and appreciate. And I think if I can sum it up, you know, there are, we had gross negligence, and we've amended some of those wordings off. And I think what the bill does is give some protections against, in terms of the inherent dangers of being on a farm, for example, that people would understand that there are some things that may be a bit dangerous. But we aren't getting into the negligent part of it, or the gross negligence part, I should say. So just that they're aware of the inherent dangers of being on a farm. And we'd give the owner some protection in that regard, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. We have an A1 amendment. Is that an author's amendment, Representative Anderson?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Okay. And so Representative Vogel would like to move the A1 amendment. It looks like you're just deleting the word gross, and I'm guessing that probably comes before negligence.
Correct.
Am I right, Representative?
Yeah. Yeah.
And any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. I believe something was just handed out to us. Looks like an A15. I'm not sure where that came from.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson, I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. And we have been working in good faith to get to language that everyone can live with on this bill. And it did not meet your 24-hour rule. I won't ask you to adopt it or consider it, but this bill is up in the Senate at noon today, and this is the language that I think we're going to be working off of over there. So I just provided it to the committee in case you were interested. I think the explanation of the bill is and kind of where we're at is appropriate, or they've accurately described it. A couple things that they haven't really touched on that I'd like the committee to know, that we're on the A1 amendment. If you look on page 2 of the bill, lines 3 through 6, one of the things that we've been concerned about is that we describe legislatively things that aren't inherent risks. And we deleted that language in the A1 amendment, and I appreciate working with the author and the proponents on that. And the other issue that we've had deals with the standard of care, and we felt gross negligence was just too high of a burden for someone that's injured through the operator's negligence to have a claim. And we've come to agreement on that negligence would be the standard when there is an accident and there is the potential for injury, and we don't want to take away someone's legitimate right to a claim when an operator has made a mistake. And I think all the operators I've talked to that are promoting this bill and are allowing people onto their farms, they want accountability when there is an accident. That's what they want, and this gets us there. As to the A15 amendment, a couple things that aren't in the A1 amendment. If you look on page 2, Madam Chair and members, on lines 2.14, you'll notice that we added language relative to dram shop claims or anything related to the sale or use of alcohol at a ag tourism facility. When you look at the definition, this applies to farm wineries and viticulture, and we want to make sure that we don't impact any existing, liability or claims that arise under our dram shop laws. And that is one of the bigger changes between the A15 and what you have in front of you. And we'd be happy to answer questions, but I believe the A15 is going to get our support in the Senate Judiciary Committee today, and it would have our support here today.
Representative Anderson, I'm just wondering what your level of acceptance is with this language that was passed out, and as well as your testifier. Have you had a chance to look at this, and do you know what's in it? And
the A15 amendment, ma'am, has been worked on just up last night. I have not seen it, but we want to work with the parties involved, and I believe I would accept that amendment at some point.
Mr. Peterson, would you like to go on record as saying this is okay?
Madam Chair, yes, I would. And I also just spoke with Farm Bureau, and they're not here, and they're also supportive of it. And and it's the other parties that have been working on it. These are the concepts that we've been working on with Mr. Carlson and the author and talking about it, and apologize. But it is good that we were able to, come together and get some agreement on it. So, again, we've been working on this for many years.
Thank you. I do have a technical amendment to make, and I hope it's okay. The A15 amendment is addressing House File 219. We're actually on House File 216. So at the top there, I would move to amend that to say House File 216. Any discussion on that amendment? Okay, seeing none. Okay. First of all, I'd like to move the A15 amendment, and in so doing would waive the 24-hour rule since this doesn't meet that. Is there any discussion on that? Representative Schoen.
Yes. If you look at 9.1.1, maybe you notice that it says to amend House File 219 as 216.
Yeah, I just said that.
Oh, did you? Representative Anderson asked me to point that out again.
Telepathically, he asked you. Awesome. Any problems with any discussion on waiving the 24-hour rule and moving the A15? All right, seeing none then, I will move the A15. First, I have to make the amendment to the amendment, right, Mr. Gehring? Okay, so we're just going to incorporate that change and change the House file number from 219 to 216. All those in favor of the A15 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. And with that, members, any discussion on the overall bill? It looks like there's consensus has been reached. Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I want to thank you for bringing this forward. I understand. Stand the inherent dangers on a farm. I grew up on a dairy farm, and with the cattle, we had numerous different groups that come to tour our farm, and we were always very careful, because I don't know if you a lot of people don't know what with cattle and little tiny salamanders, they do not mix. I myself have been trampled by some when they came flying out of the shed because there was a salamander in the feed trough. So I want to thank you for bringing this forward, because there is inherent dangers on farms, and I know the farmers and the people that I've talked to, they do their best to make them as safe as possible.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Any other comments? I will say that I've been to some of these on-farm activities, too. I know I toured a dairy farm here in the last couple of years. Like, I affectionately refer to it as the cow spa. Again, it was one of those kind of come and tour the place, get an idea what dairy farming looks like. And I know that these activities go on fairly regularly during the good weather of the summer and fall. So with that, I'm glad that finally, after all these years, there's been consensus reached on this, and I hope that gives all parties a sense of confidence that both sides are covered. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 216 as amended be adopted and re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Anderson, and testifiers.
Thanks, Madam Chair and members, for being accommodating. I really appreciate it, and I'll be on time next time. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you so much. Okay, Representative Barrett. Members, House File 793 was laid on the table last Thursday, and on that same day we had adopted Representative Barrett's A3 amendment. So what I would like to do, I guess we laid it over, not on the table. So at this time I'd like to move again House File 793 as it was amended last Thursday, and I believe there is an author's amendment to again today. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you, Representative Barrett. Would you like to explain what that amendment does, please?
Sure. Madam Chair, this is language that came to me by representatives of the City of Minneapolis related to a small hill that they have. It's a clarifying language. Relatively insignificant as it relates to the total bill. If staff would like to go through it in more detail, I'd be happy to have that happen.
Okay.
What's the number?
It's A4. The A4 amendment, members.
Chair and representatives, the A4 amendment changes one of the definitions that's included in the bill, and it. The previous statute that was cited, the 466.03 subdivision 60, is actually a substantive area of law, and so it's not a technical definition. The definition that's being inserted is a regional recreation open space, and that is specific to the metro area, and it includes their parks and trails.
Thank you, Ms. Mullen. Any Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that gives them immunity or the protections that the skiers get for all public parks, all public trails in the metro area?
Ms. Mullen?
I can pull out the definition for you. I think it relates to, regional recreation open spaces as defined in the metro area.
So,
Representative Hillstrom, Ms. Mullen?
The term operator for the bill, this is excluding cross-country and alpine ski trains so that those aren't included in the bill as an operator. So those areas would not, the cross-country ski areas in the metro area would not be included as operators. Is that your question?
So, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm trying to determine if this is just going to be the ski hill, whether you're in the metro, whether it's owned by the city, the state, private entity, or if now we're talking about all public park areas and all activities that happen in the park and all the, right, so I'm just trying to get a sense whether this was a little expansion or whether now this just became the complete expansion of.
Ms. Mullen.
The definition says the term excludes cross-country or other non-alpine ski trails or terrain that are part of an outdoor recreation system. So it's specifically related to non-alpine ski trails and cross-country skiing in the metro area. Those are not operators of a ski. The bill is not getting at those types of skiing for the purposes of creating the liability standards in this bill.
So, Ms. Mullen, is this an exclusion of those types
of? It's an exclusion of those. They are not included.
They are not included in this bill.
In the protections in this bill.
So it's not expanding them, it's excluding them, is the way I understand it.
Sure.
Now, Representative Lesh.
Now I'm reconfused because I'm not understanding why the city of Minneapolis would be wanting to ensure they remain liable for their screw ups. So how did that work?
Is there a testifier that wants to take a stab at that? Please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Lucy Botzik, Executive Director for the Ski Areas Association. Kirk Peterson brought this to us from the Minneapolis Parks Board, and it's my understanding that this is just a clarification and making sure the definitions are in the right place, and it relates to the existing situation for the municipal areas that have significant benefits from liability in certain situations statutorily. So it's my understanding it's not meant to change anything for the municipals other than to clarify definitions.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, if we could just hold off so that I'm sure about this and then maybe get commentary from the opposition so I know what I don't know or don't know what I know?
Well, Representative Lesh, this amendment did, it's been before us for 24 hours. It was posted in time, so.
I'm not saying not consider the amendment. I'm saying not vote on it until we get some commentary from someone who knows what they're talking about.
Well, I guess I would ask you who that might be.
Anyone other than apparently who's sitting up there right now, Madam Chair. Because I have no idea
what
the bill does.
Do you have any comment on this?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson for the Association for Justice. I believe what the amendment is intending to do is to make certain that the trails on the Minneapolis or the park system are not covered by the bill and that they are governed by their existing liability under 466. Definitionally, they weren't in the bill. I quite frankly don't think it's needed. It's belts and suspenders, but it doesn't, I mean, I have all kinds of issues with the bill, but this just isn't one of them. It just makes clear that they are not definitionally included in the bill.
That was helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So it is belts and suspenders, comfort language. And so any other questions regarding the A4? Just one moment, please. Representative Barrett, do you have any comments on the A4?
Madam Chair, Kirk Peterson came with this amendment. It seemed like clarifying language. I could take it or leave it. It's not, as I mentioned in the opening, it isn't central to the bill at all. It was done because he believes it's necessary to exclude his non-alpine ski trail from the bill. Thought it was okay. I could take it or leave it. If you don't want to accept it, that's fine.
Okay. Further discussion? Representative Lesh? No?
Thank you, Madam.
Okay. The A2 or the A4 is before us. All those in favor of the A4, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. To the bill. Well, let's see. I believe Representative Lesh has several amendments. Representative Galesh, what is your wish on the amendments?
Well, I wonder if we could, Madam Chair, thank you.
Since we had a hiatus between then and now, I was working with the Minnesota Association for Justice and offering these amendments, so I wondered if I could have Mr. Carlson come down as I offered them, and he could help me explain these. But I would like to, and I don't know if the proponents had any further testimony before that, Madam Chair.
Representative Barrett, would you like to refresh us on the bill? And if your testifier has anything that he would like to add, that would be fine, too.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Madam Chair. So the bill generally does three things. It creates an inherent risk of skiing. That inherent risk is in statute in almost every major ski state in the country, about 28, the top 28. It also creates responsibilities for the skier, and they're defined in the bill. It also creates responsibilities for the ski area. So those are the three major areas of the bill.
Thank you. And would your testifier like to add to that? Go ahead and state your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Brian Johnson. I'm an attorney in private practice, and I've been representing ski areas in liability cases for the last 30 years. I've had several jury trials and court appearances, which has given me working knowledge of the law of inherent risk, how it works in the courts, and the effect of this bill. And I would just say briefly, from my perspective, the best part of this bill is that it sets forth concrete rules for both skiers and ski areas alike that are easy to follow, which the courts will be able to follow. I think given the language of the bill at this point, this is not a change in the law. It's rather a codification of current law. That is, that if a skier assumes an inherent risk of skiing, that is not actionable. And if a ski area does not follow its rules under the statute, then they are subject to liability. So this does not wipe out lawsuits, but in fact gives concrete rules to both skiers and ski areas alike. So thank you.
Thank you. And if you would please stay at the testifiers table in case there are further questions from members as we go through these amendments, that would be helpful.
Thank you.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, my question relates to your statement that this is just a mere codification and is also consistent with the other states that have passed this. Are there any other states that remove negligence as the standard and bring us out to recklessness as a standard?
Mr. Johnson.
Yes, the current law in Minnesota is that if a skier faces an inherent risk of skiing, that's the end of the analysis. You don't look at whether the ski area was negligent or not. And that's the law in other states as well. So it is a codification of the law in Minnesota and elsewhere.
Okay, well, I'm sure I'd like to get some clarification on that because that's not the way I understand it necessarily, so thank you.
Okay, Representative Lesh, would you like to begin moving your amendments? Do you want Mr. Carlson to come forward? Or?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair, thank you.
All right, Mr. Carlson is making his way to the table with all of his papers.
Am I right in understanding, Madam Chair, that the A3 was already offered in the last hearing?
Yes, Representative Lesh, that was added to the bill last time.
Thank you. So I do have the 6A amendment.
All right,
Madam Chair.
Are you moving the 6A?
I am moving the 6A amendment.
Okay, to the amendment.
To the amendment, Madam Chair, this states that ski vehicles are not an inherent risk of skiing. I have a case regarding Lutzen Mountains about a vehicle being parked in the middle of a narrow area where a person was skiing in. It was just parked there. You couldn't ski around it. The guy ran into it, and the skier successfully moved for summary judgment, which I found incredible. But if Mr. Carlson could further explain it.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson for the Association for Justice. And Madam Chairman and members, this is a bill that we've arm wrestled with since 1997. That was the first time I testified on this bill. So it has been around quite some time. Mr. Johnson's an excellent trial lawyer. We disagree with him on whether or not this restates the current law, and we can have that disagreement, but because we don't think it does in a number of areas, including the one that Representative Lesch just pointed out in a case called Verbergamo's. The ski area vehicle was not an inherent risk. It wasn't on the slope as the skier went down the first four or five times. It was unmarked and on the slope on the fifth time he went down and he ran into it and was injured. And the court found that the ski vehicle was not an inherent risk. When you definitionally put ski vehicles into an object that a skier runs into and you put all the risk and all the responsibility on the skier, that to us shifts the burden, and that's why we don't think ski vehicles are necessarily an inherent risk. And you know, as we do have a different perspective on the bill, Madam Chair and members, and including as the standard of care. And I have looked at the states that have this, and the one at the very top of the list is Colorado. And Colorado, in the handout that you had, has more ski visits than the bottom 14 states combined. And they have at 11,545 ski visits a year. And when I read the Colorado Ski Safety Act and I read the revised statute that's been in place since 1999, and I read that a violation of a ski area operator of any requirement of this article shall, to the extent such violation cause injury to person or damage to property, constitutes negligence on the part of the operator. That's their statute, and it's been affirmed in their court several times. Just one case, Doling versus Barrett and Copper Mountain, the ski operator's negligence, which is established by this statute, is not an inherent risk of skiing. What I'm suggesting to you, and I've looked at all the other states, Vermont, Utah, New York, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Washington, Oregon, Montana, Ohio, Maine, Wyoming, New Mexico, West Virginia, Nevada, North Carolina, Alaska, Virginia, Arizona, Connecticut, and Tennessee, as I read their laws and what their case law is, all seem to me to be based on a negligence standard. And when you turn to the bill, and this is a huge concern for us, and on 3.21, where you say an object, which includes a ski vehicle now, or condition that is present through the reckless act or omission of the operator is not an inherent risk. But it doesn't say the negligent. The negligent act or omission of the ski operator. And that is a key problem that we have with the bill. The other problem in this very section on 3.21 to 3.26 is that it says that an inherent risk shall be determined by a court as a matter of law. An inherent risk in Minnesota, unless all of the evidence is conclusive and you can win at summary judgment, inherent risk is a question for the jury. This, we believe, simply takes inherent risk away from the jury, allows only a bench trial on the inherent risk, and we don't think that should be the status of the law.
Madam Chair.
These two points, Madam Chair, are the biggest concerns that we've had about this bill.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This being the Civil Law Committee, I think it is kind of important to relay the nature of a recklessness. So in that situation, Mr. Carlson, what would the plaintiff, the injured party, have to show in order to establish recklessness? Is it knowing or have reason to know that parking that vehicle there would result in injury or serious injury?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chairman and Representative Lesch, I'll run up and get my jig book to read to you what the jury instruction is on recklessness, but I would just say, just generally, it's a very high degree of negligence or no care.
Well, Madam Chair, we have Mr. Johnson here. Mr. Johnson, what would the injured party have to establish for a recklessness standard in order to survive a motion against them for summary judgment?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, in that situation.
Representative Barrett.
Can I ask, what part of the bill are we on? Are we on Amendment 8?
We're supposed to be on the A15, yes.
Okay, so what we're referring to are other amendments. I think Representative Lash might be offering a little bit later. But if I could, for a second, refer sure. to something specific that Mr. Carlson mentioned regarding the Colorado law.
Sure.
Because I have the act in front of me, and so Section 4 of the law says, each skier shall stay clear of snow grooming equipment, all vehicles, lift towers, signs, and any other equipment on the ski slopes and trails. I think that information is important to the discussion as it relates to other sections of law that have been passed in the 28 other states that have ski safety laws.
Indeed.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative Barrett, I think it's important that you understand, and I assume you're a skier?
I am.
Okay. I switched over from skiing to snowboarding about 10 years ago. And it's a little bit different. So in this situation,
Representative Lush, you don't have long hair.
I'm not allowed to have long hair now, Madam Chair. Wait till
all right.
Get out of the military, and then I'll have a nice crop, a nice mane. Okay. So when I take my snowboard up in say Afton Alps now, which is owned now by Vail Resorts, okay, an out-of-state corporation. I go up in one of the hills in front. In order to get all the way across to the other side, I need to build up enough momentum on my snowboard to get across this catwalk over to, it goes above the bunny hill and down onto the other side. So you're going at a pretty good speed. And on a snowboard, so that I don't go off the cliff on the other side, I need to make sure that I'm going through there at a pretty good clip. Now, if anyone had left a vehicle, a snowmobile, or a snowmobile with one of those trailers with the stretchers on that catwalk, I would be in serious trouble. And I realize the rules say I'm obligated to stay away from vehicles, Representative Barrett, but I'm coming around a corner. And if all of a sudden I clip that thing and go over the cliff on my snowboard, tail over tea kettle, I failed to steer clear of the ski vehicles. And I'm trying to figure out how that would be just if Vail Resorts moved for summary judgment and say, look at this, he didn't even obey the rules that we have for him in the hill by staying away from snowmobiles. How in that question directly relates to the amendment that I'm offering. So maybe you can explain that to me, and my question for Mr. Johnson remains the same. What would I have to show in order to win on a summary judgment in that situation?
There it is.
Snowboarders.
Okay. Who wants to go first? Representative Barrett, you want to go first? Or?
I'd be happy to. Again, okay. I was referring to Mr. Carlson's mention of other ski statutes and pointing out the fact that, indeed, other ski statutes call out equipment that is necessary for the safety of the skier to be near the ski slope, and properly so they can help out in case of injury and other things to groom the ski slope. That was my point in mentioning that.
Right.
Contrary to, I think, what was heard a few minutes ago.
Common sense would tell me, and I'm no lawyer, but common sense would tell me you need to be in control of whatever. That's one of the inherent risks of going snowboarding or skiing is, you know, you have to take some responsibility to be in control of whatever it is you're doing. So I don't know if that's related at all, but I'll let Mr. Johnson take a stab at it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In a situation that you're describing where a vehicle is completely blocking a ski run, I would say that is not an inherent risk of skiing, and that the snowboarder in your case could bring suit and have a court determine whether it was or not. So I think even under this bill, that would be actionable.
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, what would I have to establish for a recklessness standard?
Mr. Johnson.
It would be greater than ordinary negligence is literally what the law is.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, that sounds really squishy. And when I'm in a full body cast going up against Vail Resorts, I would like to know that there is actually something a little bit more solid that I can actually get compensation for my injuries of whatever they are, if in fact that was recklessness. So, but anyway, Madam Chair, I don't know if Mr. Carlson had anything more to offer on the 6A amendment, but I think I'm prepared to vote on it. And I ask for a roll call.
All right. Before we get to that, I think Representative Johnson has the question.
Madam Chair, a little bit of a comment. I believe Representative Lesh may have left one important factor out in describing the negligence. What was the reason the vehicle was there for? If it was there for a medical emergency, it needs to be there. If somebody just left it there and or it broke down and they didn't mark it, there would be negligence there, so that wouldn't, I don't see that it would be an issue. But if it's there for a specific reason, for somebody's injured or something, and the snowboarder or the skier is not in control, then the snowboarder might, then it'd be up to the courts to decide whether there was partial or some type of negligence at that point.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just in response to that, I think Representative Johnson brings up a great point, because the case on point, the guy with the last name starting with V versus Lutz and Mountains, I can't pronounce the name, Verberg Moes, was a summary judgment motion. A summary judgment motion, members, is an effort on the part of the company to avoid having to have the finder of fact determine what exactly was the case there. They want to have the judge say, yep, you just weren't shown enough, so your case is tossed out. You have no remedy here. And getting to the point where a finder of fact, a jury, decides those factors you're talking about, I think is very important. And that's what we're doing with the standard here, and that's what's happening with the proposed law change.
Okay, members, the A6, Representative Lesh, or excuse me, who was the A15, all those in favor, please signify by saying.
Madam Chair, as for roll call.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. Roll call has been requested.
Chair Scott.
No.
Representative Smith. Representative Applebaum?
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen? Yes. Representative Hillstrom?
Aye.
Representative Poppy?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Lohmer?
No.
Representative Schoen?
Aye.
Representative Vogel?
Nope.
No, it's
the motion is, does not prevail.
4-4.
Madam Chair, I have the 6B amendment.
Okay, 6B.
I'd also ask for a roll call on this.
All right, a roll call has been requested.
But Madam Chair, I don't think we don't need to go into this a lot more, because we did touch on it. In discussion about the 6A amendment, this specifically states, as opposed to naming ski vehicles as one of those items, this says that negligence should be the standard, other than just recklessness. And Madam Chair, I just point out that when my first experience with this bill, the version of this bill, was when I first got elected, some Hoppy, and I don't know if there's any other class of 2002 here, but got elected with Bud Heidgerken. And Bud Heidgerken was bringing this around and actually got me to sign on to it. Because I like skiing. He's like, well, you like skiing, don't you? And no one could say no to Bud Heidgerken, okay? So I'm like, yeah, I like skiing. He's like, well, this is just letting the mom and pops, you know, make sure that they have a good ski hill. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, I signed on it. Well, I started finding out more about it, but even that bill did not throw out the negligence standard, which should be the case, as Mr. Carlson just relayed to you, that overall you should be accountable and responsible for your mistakes. So this just places negligence as the standard in again, and I wondered if Mr. Carlson could speak to it, Madam Chair.
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I think what Representative Johnson just indicated as it relates to running into the ski vehicle is exactly right. And you said it exactly right. When they're negligent, they should have a claim. That's not what this bill says. our heartburn goes down considerably when the law stays the same relative to their standard of care, which is negligence, and not shifting it to reckless. And that is what the purpose of this amendment is. It's just how we handle the farmers who are opening up their property without compensation. They want to be held to a negligent standard, and that's what they've agreed to. Now we're saying whether it's Vail at $3.9 billion of value or some other for-profit company is going to have a reckless standard for ski accidents. We believe, I've said it in front of this committee dozens of times, we believe in the assumption of risk. We believe that there are inherent risks. But operator negligence is not an inherent risk of skiing. It's not an inherent risk of skiing in that list of states, many of them. You don't want to get injured in Michigan. It's not the standard in other states. And I don't think that it is an appropriate place for us to move this statute in Minnesota.
Representative Barrett, or your other testifier, any comments?
Sure, I'd like to comment on that, and probably Mr. Johnson would as well. He touched on it earlier as it relates to current law. He's a better communicator of what is current law right now. But let me just read the section in the bill that we're referring to, so that we have proper clarification for what this amendment would do.
You want to give us a page and line?
Yeah, 3.21, Madam Chair. An object or condition that is present through the reckless act or omission of the operator or another person is not a risk inherent in skiing. Whether an object or condition is a risk inherent in skiing shall be determined by a court as a matter of law. So that's what the language is, and that's what we're referring to as far as a potential amendment for.
Right. Thank you. Mr. Johnson, did you have any comments?
The current law in Minnesota in this area is that if a skier is injured through an inherent risk of skiing, yes or no, if the answer is yes, that's the end of the analysis. There's no review of whether the ski area is negligent or not, and that's why this language reflects current Minnesota law.
Thank you. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Barrett, so do you believe that it's more dangerous for the operators of the ski areas to let people be on their property than it is for farmers to let people be on theirs? Because we just heard a lot of testimony that it's inherently dangerous for farming and it's inherently dangerous to have people come onto your property. And so do you believe that these private owners of ski areas should get a better deal than Minnesota farmers? Because that's what this bill does.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative, I would have to know the current law as it relates to farmers. I know you heard the bill. I was back here. I'm not on the Civil Law Committee, so it's not my job to compare one bill that was heard at 8:45 on a morning to another bill that was heard at 9:15. So I can't answer that. But what I can do and what I wanted to do is actually look at the bill, look at the language of the bill, so that this committee, in your good judgment, could determine what that bill, what that section is intended to do. And this section of the bill is intended to say that reckless acts are not an inherent risk. That is language that protects the skier. That was the intention of that section of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But it is also our job to decide what's fair for all Minnesotans. And are activities inherently dangerous? And what level of protection should we give to people across Minnesota in determining whether or not they should get sued? And your bill is saying that we should give way more protection to a recklessness standard, if you happen to be a for-profit ski resort, then we should give to our farmers. And I believe that that's fundamentally unfair. So I supported, and they worked really, really hard to come to compromise on the farming bill, and I supported it. I just think that you can't say that farming is less dangerous than operating a ski resort, and that farmers who are doing it not for profit should get less protection than ski resorts who are doing it for profit.
I just have a question here, because there's been this is the second time I've heard the difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit. What does the law say? So as a nonprofit, if it's owned by a city, they can just do whatever they want and not have any danger of being sued. They can be as negligent as they want.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom?
We just spoke about that. They actually have a different section of statute that they're liable under, and they have different caps. And so that was the language.
And why should that be? I mean, to me, negligence is negligence.
But, Madam Chair, you're going to recklessness in this bill, not negligence, and that's what we're talking
about.
Okay,
recklessness is recklessness, regardless of who owns the ski resort, in my opinion. I think this is good language, but I don't think that nonprofits should be treated any differently. Representative Lesch.
Madam Chair, thank you. You know, Representative Barrett, it kind of is your job to know the difference between the bills that we pass through this committee, especially as it relates to a legal standard, because that's the language in your bill. You just quoted the language on 3.21. An object that is present through a reckless act or omission of the operator is not an inherent risk of skiing. What you just said there is, well, yeah, of course. We're not saying if the operator is reckless that that's an inherent risk of skiing, as if that's a virtue of your bill. It's not, because everything south of recklessness then is something that the judge determines as here. If it's inherent risk, it gets determined as a matter of law. And despite your testifiers' unwillingness to state the standard, I've got the standard right here, Madam Chair. And now this isn't specific in the court cases, but I had to look it up. I just had to Google it. Recklessness is rashness, heedlessness, or wanton conduct. The state of mind accompanying the act that either pays no regard to its probability or possibly injurious consequences, or which, through foreseeing such consequences, persists in spite of such knowledge. Recklessness transcends ordinary negligence. He did say that. To be reckless, though, conduct must demonstrate indifference to consequences under circumstances involving peril to the life or safety of others, although no harm is intended. That's pretty high in order to get up there. Whereas the farmers who just came in here had said, no, you don't have to show that someone is a complete idiot in order to recover. You have to show that they were negligent to their duties. Negligence is you have a duty and you breached a duty, and that goes to a jury of your peers. What this bill is saying is that, no, we don't want to go that far. You'd have to show that they're completely off their rocker, in which case a judge can determine that. So I think Mr. Carlson's absolutely right. This bill, Representative Barrett, is going a lot further than previous incarnations.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just actually asked staff to look up the difference between the public entities that are in this bill and whether they have negligence or recklessness in the standard. So I'm hoping that they can enlighten us, because I think it's negligence.
Chair and representatives, the Chapter 466 covers liability for political subdivisions, and 466.02 is the tort liability, which is that those municipalities are subject to the limitations in this chapter when acting under their duties. So subdivision 6E of 466.03 provides the exceptions. In parks and recreation areas, any claim based upon construction, operation, or maintenance of a property owned or leased by the municipality that is intended or permitted to be used as a park or an open area for recreation purposes, or for any claims for the clearing of land, removal of refuse, if the claim arises from a loss incurred by the user of a park. So it limits the liability and it pretty extensively. Yeah, it's blanket immunity for municipalities.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair, we probably need a day and a half to go through municipal tort liability in Chapter 466, but generally at its base, under 466, municipalities are responsible for their torts based on negligent conduct, and it's even more so if they are a participant in the market, like someone that owns a ski hill. I can tell you that they have claims that happen at Spirit Mountain, for example, just a week ago. Two people fell off of the ski lift. I don't know that those will be claims, but I can tell you that there are cases out there against Spirit Mountain that are reported and are knowable. They don't have blanket immunity. And what I wanted to say, because I just think this, you know, this case that Representative Les mentioned, Verberkamos, let's read a couple passages from it. Lutzen Mountain argued that the object struck by Verberkamos, the ski vehicle, is irrelevant to the issue of primary assumption of risk because the skier, Verberkamos, assumed the risk of hitting anything. The court rejects this argument. They go on to say, in this opinion, that the negligent maintenance and supervision of a ski resort is not an inherent risk of the sport itself. That's what we're trying to get at. This moving this standard to recklessness, we think, fundamentally changes the law in a way that I don't see present in very many statutes. I've mentioned Michigan. I try to tell you the ones that aren't on my side either. North Dakota, too, that ski mecca, has not a very good standard. But basically, they're negligence-based. And that's why we believe this language changes the law fundamentally, both on the standard and that inherent risk would now become exclusively a matter for the court and not a matter for the trier of fact. And that has been the law. I think the last case I read last night went back to 1962.
Thank you. Any other member discussion on the A6B? Seeing none, there is a roll call has been requested.
Chair Scott.
No.
Representative Smith. Representative Applebaum.
Aye.
Representative Grunhagen. Representative Hillstrom.
Aye.
Representative Poppy.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lohmer.
No.
Representative Pinto. Representative Schoen.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
Nay.
With a vote of 4 in favor, 7 against, the motion fails.
Motion does not prevail.
Madam Chair, I'd like to withdraw the 6C that was addressed in the author's amendments.
All right.
And I believe that is also true for 6D. I'd like to withdraw 6D.
6C and 6D have been withdrawn.
Madam Chair, to the 6E amendment.
Representative Lesh.
The 6E amendment states that inherent risk is generally a question for the jury. This goes to the discussion that we had with Representative Johnson earlier about the fact that a judge could summarily remove this from the province of a jury of your peers because of a determination as to whether some or not something is reckless or not, whether that judge has ever skied a day in her life or not. I put 6E before the committee, Madam
All
Chair.
All right. Discussion on the 6E amendment. Anyone at the testifiers table want to take a stab at it? Mr. Johnson, anybody? Representative Barrett? No?
Madam Chair, inherent risk is a question for the jury. It is not a matter for the court unless it is conclusive. If I lose that summary judgment because all the facts are conclusive, we understand that. But the law in Minnesota, to the extent this isn't changing the law, the law in Minnesota is that an inherent risk is generally a question for the trier of fact and not the court.
Mr. Johnson?
I have to respectfully disagree, Madam Chair. I've been doing this a long time. I've brought many motions for summary judgment to a judge to say, Your Honor, is this an inherent risk of the sport or not? And the judge says yes or no. If the judge says no, we go to trial on a negligence standard against the ski area, which would happen under this statute as well. So I respectfully disagree with the recitation of Mr. Carlson what the law is. It's just not that way.
Thank you. Further discussion on the 6E? Seeing none?
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Carlson. Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But you're changing the standard to recklessness. And so you wouldn't go to the jury. It says you're going to go to the trier of fact, but you're changing the standard to recklessness, so you're not even going on negligence.
Mr. Johnson.
Again, thank you, Madam Chair. No, that's the law currently is if the skier is injured through an inherent risk of skiing, that's the end of the analysis. You don't determine whether the ski area was negligent or not, and that is what this bill does. And in fact, this language says if the ski area is reckless, then that isn't an inherent risk of skiing. So therefore, this is in the skier's side of the equation, this reckless language.
Seeing no further discussion on the 6E, all those in favor of adopting the 6E, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Aye.
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 The 6E is not adopted. Representative Lesh to the 6F.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The 6F deletes ordinarily prudent skier standard because this is not the law. This is not an inherent risk of skiing, as cited by the original federal court case that we discussed originally.
All right. Further discussion on the 6F? Seeing none.
I ask for a roll call, Madam Chair.
All right. A roll call has been requested. Staff will take the roll.
Chair Scott.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Applebaum.
Aye.
Representative Grunhagen. Representative Hillstrom.
Aye.
Representative Hoppe.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lohmer.
No.
Representative Pinto. Representative Schoen. Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
Nay.
With a vote of 3 ayes and 7 noes, the motion fails.
Motion fails. On to the 6G. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 6G deletes the insurance inspection provision. I wondered if Mr. Carlson could speak to it.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair and members, I have less heartburn about this issue after talking to the proponents of the bill, which we've done in good faith. Our concern is that you have the insurance company inspecting the lift and never being able to find a problem when there is a claim. And so if you just allow, there's a self-interest there that seems problematic. I understand in talking to the proponents why they want the insurance inspector to do that, but it just seems like an inherent self-interest for the company to make certain that there isn't liability.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Under the standards with respect to this issue of inspection of lifts, Section 4.3.4.1 requires of the ski areas to have a general inspection of each area lift annually or after 2,000 hours of operation, whichever comes first, by an aerial lift specialist independent of the owner. And so the amendment would say it has to be a professional engineer, but in fact, the most qualified of these aerial lift inspectors are not engineers necessarily. They've been doing it all their lives, a great deal of experience and a great interest in having the lifts be safe, whether it's an insurance company representative or employee or independent. The insurance company doesn't want a bad lift either.
Any further discussion on the 6G amendment?
That's for roll call, Madam Chair.
Roll call has been requested. The staff will take the roll.
Chair Scott.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Applebaum.
Aye.
Representative Grunhagen. Representative Hillstrom.
Aye.
Representative Hoppe.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lohmer.
No.
Representative Pinto. Representative Schoen. Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
Aye.
With 3 ayes, 7 noes, the motion fails.
6G does not prevail. Representative Lesh to the 6H.
Madam Chair, 6H does not state the current law on claims, and it was not amended by the author's amendment, so I offer it for the committee's consideration.
Okay.
Madam Chair, if I could.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would encourage a yes vote on this amendment. It's a good amendment.
Very good.
I withdraw my roll call, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Lesh. Any discussion on the 6H? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 6H, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The 6H is adopted.
Madam Chair, the 6I.
The 6I. Representative Lesh.
This amendment deletes the comparative fault section because it's not needed. Comparative fault is already the standard in Minnesota.
To the amendment, Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I neglected to mention earlier the hard work done by both sides of this issue, as Representative Lesh and others have mentioned. There is considerable discussion and talk from different sides, has been going on for many years. This bill is different than other bills. In that spirit of cooperation, I would encourage a yes vote on this amendment.
Any further discussion on the 6I? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 6I, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The 6I is adopted. To the 6J, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if I have my notes. Oh, here we go on 6J. So, Madam Chair, the 6J I wonder if I could have Mr. Carlson describe the 6J, Madam Chair.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair and members.
What did it fall through?
Right through. It was negligent.
Down it went.
Operator error.
I think so. Operator
Mr.
negligence.
Carlson.
Operator negligence. Madam Chair and members, the language on page 2, line 1.2, seems to indicate to us that any age or physical or mental disability would now be subject to a recklessness standard. And we think when you have children or people with disabilities, you may have an even higher duty to them, whether it's through supervision or otherwise. And that language puts everyone now on the same footing, whether they're handicapped, young, disabled. And we just think that just goes too far. We think you might have a different and want to have a different duty. Deleting that language just describes a skier as a person who is skiing and present, and then you can argue under the current law whether or not you owed them a different duty, and that's why we suggest deleting that language.
Representative Barrett, what do other states do on this? If you know, maybe you don't.
I can look up quick, but I don't. I believe some states refer to it, others leave it silent.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, do you happen to know?
I don't.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Further discussion on the 6J. Seeing none, all those in favor of the 6J, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. No.
No.
The 6J is not adopted. To the 6K, Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, the 6K states that stumps may not be an inherent risk of skiing. This is reference to the Brunstang v. Lutzen case from 2010. It's an Eighth Circuit case.
All right. Discussion on the 6K. Representative Baird or Mr. Johnson, do you either one have a comment on this language?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, looking at other statutes, it's clear other states include stumps as an inherent risk because of the issue of, I guess, called tree skiing, in which skiers go not necessarily in a groomed trail, but a trail that is near or close to trees and other objects related to trees.
Further discussion on the 6K. Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair, members, many other states likewise also include the term negligence as it relates to the standard of care. And whether or not the stump is an inherent risk has been litigated in Minnesota. And we believe now with the language as it relates to recklessness, even if they don't mark the stump, that you're never going to have a claim, even when you run into it and it's their fault, which was the case that Representative Lesh cited.
Thank you. Further discussion on the 6K? Seeing none, all those in favor of the 6K amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
No. The 6K is not adopted.
Division, Madam Chair, I think you misheard.
Okay. All those in favor of the 6K, please signify by raising your hand. Those opposed to the 6K. The 6K does not prevail. To the 6L, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The 6L, the author's amendment provides that a notice of claim that is the same as municipalities. The amendment removes that provision because there's no reason to treat ski hills any different than other business.
Okay. Discussion on the 6L. Seeing none, all those in favor of the 6L, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, please say nay.
Nay.
Nay. The amendment 6L does not prevail. With that, folks, that completes the amendments. Any further discussion on the bill as amended?
Madam Chair.
Representative Lesh.
I didn't know if the testifiers had any closing comments. I guess I'd rather wait to hear those comments before I commented.
Okay, very fine. Testifiers wishing to comment?
Madam Chair and members, while we remain willing to consider discussing this issue, despite comments, this bill is a substantial departure from Minnesota law. It places all of the risk on skiers. It ignores operator negligence, and we adamantly oppose it in its current form.
Mr. Johnson, any closing remarks?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. To the bill's author, Mr. Representative Barrett, do you have any? We'll let Representative Lesh go, and then you can.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, this is a significant departure, and you can tell by the testimony this is a significant departure. When I asked Mr. Johnson, what recklessness is, and he said, well, it's somewhere above negligence. Well, you know, in the criminal law, we have different standards, too, and what that standard is matters greatly upon whether or not you're going to be found liable. And when you raise this to a recklessness standard, which is very high, yes, it is above negligence. But as I stated in the definitions under the law, that it's wanton. It's absolutely wanton. So in order to get my claim heard against Vail Resorts, if I break my leg because they're blocking a trail, I have to show wanton disregard on the part of the ski hill. That's difficult to do. That's extremely difficult to do. So. And the difference, you saw two smart lawyers disagreeing on what was going on here. If you've got two smart lawyers disagreeing on what the bill actually does, this isn't just a simple codification of what the law is in Minnesota. Unless you want to consider Mr. Carlson as completely disingenuous and spewing falsehoods in front of the committee, no, this is not as simple as it's being made to sound like it is. I urge members to put the brakes on this thing. There has been some negotiation, but Representative Barrett, you've really outpunted your coverage on this one. And whether it's for the purposes of negotiation or not to get it through the Senate, I don't know. But you're asking this committee to take an unreasonable step that goes well beyond where we're at in Minnesota. And I think members of the committee should know that when they vote on it.
I would just want to add, too, that Mr. Carlson is not an attorney. So unless you're referring to yourself versus Mr. Johnson, this is two smart attorneys disagreeing, maybe you were referring to yourself.
Was. You know, Madam Chair, everyone thought that Representative Paymar was a lawyer, too, because when he chaired, and I think it was because of his hair.
Could be.
His hair was just kind of slick.
Could be. But would you want to comment on Mr. Carlson's hair?
He's got great hair.
Hey, sure.
All right.
When I first started testifying on this bill, I had hair. Madam Chair, I own a legal research and government affairs business. I'm a lobbyist. I've been a lobbyist since 1989. I don't practice law. I've learned a lot of it here and work with a lot of firms that do it. But I'm happy to present information to the committee. I won't challenge where's Representative Grunhagen today? I wish he was here. He always tells me steel sharpens steel. And so I appreciate the banter in committee, but I do think that this bill is a far departure from where we're currently at in the law.
Representative Barrett, you get the final word.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Pleasure to be here before the committee today. This is a bipartisan bill. It does relate to skier safety. It does relate to improving skier safety in our state, as 28 other states have done over the past few years. And I'm here today to support the bill. Would appreciate your support as well.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. With that, all those in favor?
Madam Chair, I would ask for a roll
call. All right, a roll call has been requested. We will be voting on House File 793 as amended, and it will be going to the referred to the General Register. Staff will take the roll.
Chair Scott.
Aye.
Chair Smith. Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Applebaum.
No.
Representative Grunhagen. Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Poppe.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Lush.
No.
Representative Lohmer.
Yes.
Representative Pinto. Representative Schoen. Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative Zerwas.
Yes.
With a vote of 7-3, the motion prevails.
House File 793 as amended will be going to the General Register. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.